The Athletic.
Welcome to Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. I'm joined by The Athletic City correspondent Sam Lee. Hi, Sam.
Hiya.
How are you doing, mate?
I was trying to go for the Richard Osman pointless hire.
that was a good Richard Osman pointless hire, actually.
He's very good at those. The best hires in the game. I tell you what, that and Glenn Hoddle's just. He goes just whenever he's on PT commentary. They're my two favourite one-word television things.
I hadn't noticed that, but just on a technical point, is it not a? Is Richard Osman's not a hello hire? Does he not? Ooh. Does he not? Hello hire.
There's. Maybe he mixes up because there's definitely a one word straight in hire.
Anyway, we'll get into quiz show chat a bit later on, I guess. Yeah. But let's crack on with some City for the time being. The Champions League is back, and there's no better time to sign up for all of our unrivaled coverage at The Athletic. Until February the 25th, we're offering new subscribers a half-price annual subscription. That's less than £1 a week for an entire year. To redeem that limited-time-only offer, go to theathletic.com/mancitypod. That's theathletic.com/mancitypod. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review as well. Best place to start, Sam. The winning run has kind of carried on. This is a little bit of a detour to start us off with, but you know we do that anyway, so I'm sure the listeners will forgive us.
We've already had one detour. Yeah. At least this is about football.
Yeah, I wanted to start with this from Friday's pre-match press conference because throughout the time that City weren't performing brilliantly and it was looking like this season was going to be a bit of a struggle, in the months before Christmas, as it was at the back end of last season as well. We were asked a lot by we put questions out on Twitter. You know, what do you want us to talk about? And we were asked a lot about losing Mikel Arteta and if the problem was Juanma Leo not giving as much input or the same input or the right input. And Guardiola was asked about him on Friday, and I think it would be right to kind of address that and put out what he said. So this is what Guardiola had to say about Juanma Leo.
As a friend of mine from a long time ago, finally we can work together. It was a dream and now a dream come true. His knowledge of the game is overwhelming. So he sees something that few people in the world, me included, is not able to watch, to see it. He helped me to be more calm. I'm a guy sometimes express too much my feelings, and he makes me feel more calm to read better the situations. I would love he could able to speak better English that he speaks to communicate more on the pitch with the players, but maybe he needs time. He helps me a lot. And I would say with Rod as well. We make a good group of backroom staff. Rodo is since the day one also to stay. He is here, and he helps me a lot in organization, the training sessions, and even in the game, seeing what happened. Because I need the help. I need the help for something I'm not able to see, to watch. That's why they are here. That's why I said before with Mikel, before with Dome, and before with Tito Villanova, I need their advices. I need the support and see something like I'm not able to watch. So that's why it's so important and help me, especially to me, to understand, to control my emotions and see something like I'm not able to see.
Now, it's not necessarily an I told you so, Sam, but I think it's important to kind of look at this with a balanced view because, you know, while people were asking, oh, well, is the reason it's not working down to Juanma Leo? Maybe the reason now it is working is down to the input from Juanma Leo.
The thing is, whenever people were asking about this and whenever people were talking about, you know, in City's kind of patchy run or bad run or whatever, and whether it was because of Arteta or not, I was like, I never thought it was, because for a start, like this season, City's issues were there already before Arteta had left. So, you know, conceding goals on the counter-attack and not taking their chances and those issues that we saw all the way through last season, they were doing that before Arteta had left. So I was like, it just feels a bit easy to draw the line between, oh, Arteta's gone. And they're not playing well. So maybe it's that. And also by the same token now, like you say, to look at it in a balanced way, it wouldn't be fair that they're doing so well to say, oh, it's Juanma Leo. Because people would have been saying, is Juanma Leo the problem for 6 months?
And then so suddenly
and then all of a sudden, is he to get all the credit? So my point of view is, he wasn't to blame when it wasn't going badly when it was going badly, and he's not to take all the credit now it's going well. You know, the man that's always responsible is Guardiola, and that I thought there was a lot of that in the worrying about how they've gone downhill since Arteta had left, supposedly.
Yeah.
Because Guardiola's always been the man. You know, the idea that Arteta was holding City together for 3 years, I mean, that's effectively what it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, it just doesn't really hold water, does it?
No, the idea was City were great until Arteta left. So if you read into that, then yeah, exactly, it's... that he was somehow holding them together. But I mean, look, he's had Dominic Torrent before, and Dominic Torrent was a great assistant. He's mentioned Tito Villanova on that clip. They obviously had a great team, but like the common denominator in all the success, because he's been through, you know, 3 or 4 assistants now, is, you know, it's Guardiola is the main man. He just gets help, and these guys help in different ways.
Yeah.
And Wanmaleo helps in a very different way. Arteta is... he was more hands-on, of course. You know, he would be right in the thick of the training sessions, showing them, you know, himself. You know, he not only knew what Guardiola wanted, but he could actually demonstrate it, especially in the early years, because he'd only retired from playing about 2 months earlier. So he could just show them. And obviously, he had a lot of great relationships with the players, Wanmaleo. And so a lot of those things Guardiola was saying there, I've wanted to do an article on his impact, even, you know, back in the summer, when obviously things weren't going as well as they are now. I do want to do an article on Wanmaleo's impact, but I wanted to have a load of stories and information, and it's been harder to get a hold of. And also, as we get closer now towards City probably winning the title, it feels a bit more like an article to do around then. But so I've not been able to get the info exactly what he's done, but if I am going to blow my own trumpet a little, the article I did when he joined back in June, July, did lay out exactly what Guardiola said about him in the last couple of weeks, about how, even the learning English thing, Guardiola obviously said, I wish he would learn a bit more English to communicate with the players. You know, when I was speaking to people about that back in the summer, they were like, he doesn't speak great English and he probably won't learn. It'll probably be like Bielsa, where he can get across all right and he can certainly put his methods across, because of course Leeds play how Bielsa wants. But the beauty of Wanmaleo is he communicates so well in Spanish. Like, he's so close to the players and communicates his ideas so clearly, which is so important to footballers, you know, that clear and obvious communication, so people know exactly what they're supposed to do. But he does that in Spanish. And the idea is, even if he could speak a good level of English, he's never going to have that same kind of warmth and insight, because it's just kind of so advanced, I guess.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then there's also the thing about Guardiola. Yeah, he says he needs somebody to give him solutions. And that was something I wrote. You know, he mentioned Rodolfo Borrell there being like a good part of the team. And he is, you know, you can't just be Guardiola's assistant. But one of the big reasons for getting Wanmaleo in was Torrent and Arteta were very good at seeing the game and saying, we need this and we need this. Have you seen this? What about this? And Guardiola's like, what should we do with this? And they go, well, we could try this. Borrell is not quite the same as that. He helps in different ways. But obviously, Wanmaleo, as Guardiola says, he is one of those guys who will spot things and be able to say, let's try this or let's try that. But again, you know, I'm not kind of doing Wanmaleo down. I'm not saying, well, he wasn't doing this in August, so he can't get the credit now. What I'm saying is the main guy is Guardiola, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how it would be, because Wanmaleo would have been bringing things this whole time. But it's only, you know, Guardiola had that change in November, which I'm hoping to get to the bottom of exactly, you know, when he said he had that chat with Cheeky and Wanmaleo and Manuel Estiarte and people like that. So, yeah, Guardiola's the main man. Wanmaleo brings a lot of important things, like a lot of the former assistants have.
Not the sole reason.
Exactly. I mean, if Leo leaves or if Pep goes to another club later in his career and he has a different assistant, you know, they'll be good or bad based on what he's doing, not what his assistant's doing, really.
Yeah. Well, let's pivot that to the win over Arsenal at weekend, because the performance wasn't a classic, let's say, but City were, I'm going to say, arguably more comfortable than maybe we felt during the game, if that makes sense, because they were comfortably the better team. While it might have been nervy at times, there was never really any danger of Arsenal getting back into it unless João Cancelo does a strange pass back like he did. Yeah. And like, there was something you tweeted just after the game finished that made me think, actually, yeah, no, you're right on that one. And that a lot of this was in the build-up to it. I was thinking, well, Arsenal have had a patchy season, but they're a tricky side when you've got Aubameyang fit and firing, and he's looking back into it. And you just tweeted that John Stones didn't let him have a sniff, and you were absolutely spot on. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, he obviously did the two shoulder barges. The second one was a bit stronger. But he did one earlier on. It might have even been in the first half. And there was a couple of times, when you think, we talked about before how your brain processes everything at a million miles an hour as it's happening. But they'd got into a situation in the second half. Maybe this was even before the shoulder barge happened. But it was down on the Arsenal left, so City's right back area. They'd got in behind Cancelo. And it was Aubameyang up against Stones one-on-one. And immediately you just think, this could be problems here. But he just shut it down, and he just did that all game. And yeah, in terms of, like you mentioned, how Arsenal play, and they're so difficult to get through. Like Guardiola had also said after the game, he goes, if we didn't get more today, it was due to how good Arsenal were rather than us not being good, which I fully agree with. But I would also say City could have won 2 or 3-0, obviously, if they'd been better finishers, especially early on. But that was definitely the case.
Did you feel that City could just, like, if Arsenal had nicked an equaliser, City could just knock it up a gear?
So when it was getting towards half time, and I mean, I did feel like the commentators were kind of building up Arsenal and kind of, but also I get the feeling the fans would have been thinking, we need to up it here. We need to get another goal because, you know, we know what happens when teams don't take chances, et cetera, et cetera. But towards half-time, I was like, yeah, okay, Arsenal have got back into it, which is kind of inevitable, but I don't see that being a problem. And I actually thought City would start the second half quicker. I thought City would maybe not fly out of the traps like they did in the first half, but I thought they would take control of the game a bit more and probably score in the first 15 minutes of the second half, and that would be it. But, I mean, if Arsenal had scored with about 15, 20 minutes to go, or maybe even 25, 30 minutes to go. To be honest, I don't think I had the feeling that City at that point would have gone, yeah, right, we're going to go and do it. Just because I feel like they kind of settled into a pattern by that point. Obviously, they're good enough. I mean, they might well have been able to change what they were doing and upped it a bit. But I just got the sense that towards the end, yeah, I just kind of feel they were stuck in what they were trying to do. I don't necessarily mean stuck in a bad way, but they were doing what they were doing. And if they had have needed a goal, obviously they got the quality, but it just felt a bit like they'd been playing a certain way for 40-odd minutes. And I'm not sure they could have just flicked it back, but maybe they could. You know, that's how they've been so good on this run.
Let's switch it into Stones, Diaz and Laporte because it's an interesting dynamic City have got right now with those three, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously Laporte's played a lot recently. Well, not a lot. Well, compared to what he was in November, December, January, obviously partly because of injury, he has played a lot. And as Guardiola said after the Everton game, you know, they need everyone. And obviously now there's two midweek games when they didn't expect to have midweek games. So obviously City have got four home games in a row, which is pretty good. But you'd rather just have the two in a row and not have to play in midweek. But that's the calendar. So as Guardiola says, they're going to need everyone. But I think the most pertinent thing to mention here, because it doesn't sound like we're just talking about three top centre-backs. And the dynamic you mentioned, I think, probably relates to that quote Guardiola gave in his press conference on Friday as well. Because for me, Stones and Diaz, first choice. And I think for Guardiola, that's the case as well. But obviously, Laporte's can come in and play and contribute, and I'm sure he will continue to do that. But as Guardiola said in his press conference, there was, I think the question must have been, I don't remember, the question must have been something like, you know, keeping the team together or transfers or whatever. But he was like, yeah, we've got great players. Have you actually got the clip?
I've got the clip, so let's have a listen to it.
Perfect. All the players that we have deserve to stay here for many, many years. The quality that they have is exceptional, so there's no doubt. But year by year, the situation is different because there are players that accept some roles and there are players that don't accept it. It's not about the quality. It's about accept. Sometimes you don't play, or sometimes for a short time they can keep it, and sometimes they cannot keep it longer. In that moment, and that this player has to leave. And that's why the players has to be removed, like this, the same with the managers, the same the sometimes backroom staff. We had here physios and people were delighted to have him, and they decide to move on to Liverpool, two of them. So the situations happen. So for a short time, when we are all together involved, everyone's fight. But there are players, because for age, for the personality that they are, like the education that they have, for many, many reasons, they accept all the roles. And other ones, they don't accept it. And when they play, it's perfect, but they don't play, always is a problem with the team. And these players, they have to think, they have to reflect, they have to speak with the agents and with the club and decide the best for themselves, especially, and for the club as well. And that's why next season, I don't know what's going to happen, because in certain moments involved for everything, but now, of course, it's not the moment. I didn't think 1 second about that in the right moment. That's why cheeky it is. And at the end of the season, we are going to think about it, what is the best for the next season.
So, I mean, yeah, it's obviously not directly mentioning Laporte, but like it is obviously about him, isn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah, I should say, look, there might be people listening to this who are just like, look, typical journalists, you know, drawing parallels or whatever. and look, he might well have been talking generally, but it was quite detailed, wasn't it? Obviously, look, it could also relate to, you know, just cases in the past. And, you know, he might just be talking about how, you know, Sane, for example, and, you know, Mahrez even in the first season. I don't think Mahrez has those problems so much now, otherwise he wouldn't be in the team. But when he dropped him for that Huddersfield game in Mahrez's first season, you know, it was that kind of thing. It's the whole no bad faces, guys, you know, that old mantra. But, you know, I've talked about Laporte already. And, you know, when people were like, is he going to come in at left back? And obviously he has in a couple of games. But I also said, look, it's not just the case that, as exactly what Guardiola said, it's not just about the quality. Because if it was just about quality, you could play Laporte left back every game, arguably. But it's about other things. And it's about how people react to situations. And obviously I've mentioned before a couple of weeks ago that don't expect Laporte, now that he's fit, to come in and play every game, either at centre back or at left back, because it's not just all things equal. All guys are playing well and all guys are happy. You know, he's not reacted very well to losing his place. So now there's no doubt in my mind that what Guardiola said then was about Laporte, because, you know, I already said I can't say too much about it, and unfortunately that's still the case. But I think it's one of those tricky ones, because Laporte's quote before that Burnley game on BT, when he said, you know, I'm happy here, but, you know, we'll see, and hopefully I can play, or whatever it was he said, that was enough to kind of be like, yeah, okay, we're seeing a bit of this now.
There's something going on here, yeah.
And now Guardiola saying that, there's no doubt in my mind that he was talking about Laporte. You know, nobody's told me that that's what Pep was saying, but from my understanding of the situation, I've no doubt at all.
It's interesting though, because they are going to need him along, like you say, with the calendar.
This is it, Even if hypothetically he was unhappy, there's loads of games. It's like the Aguero contact situation, which we'll come on to. Like, it's not a great situation now for Aguero, and, you know, we've been told again overnight that City haven't made contact with him. But we know what the situation is there, and it's like, although, yeah, we're getting into March now, which it doesn't sound good for the chances of getting a new contract for Aguero, but as soon as he plays, and if he starts scoring goals and he looks good, then it's like, okay, well, here's your contract. And it's the same kind of thing for Laporte. If Laporte ends up playing a load of games because either rotation, like he's been playing recently, or say one of the centre-backs gets injured, or Zinchenko gets injured and he needs to play left-back, and he plays 70%, 80% of the games until now at the end of the season, there's a good chance he'll be fine. Yeah. And there won't be a problem. So yeah, it's one of those where it's like, halfway through the season, when a player is in this situation, you can write about it, you can talk about it probably more than I'm able to, and it's like, oh yeah, God, that's a serious situation. But, you know, there's still 6 months of the season to go and it can turn around. But yeah, I mean, now I think between his quote before the Burnley game to BT and Guardiola's quote in a press conference there, I think that's a good idea. You know, people don't want to believe it if they don't want it. I think that gives a good idea of the situation with Laporte. And that's why, like, going back to that word you used right at the start, the dynamic. Stones and Diaz, amazing, playing really well in the team all the time, happy, kind of accepting of their roles. Obviously Stones missed out at Everton, seemingly no problem there, but Laporte, fantastic player, not maybe not quite as good as those two because they've been so good at, in terms of this season. But yeah, mainly it's the attitude thing.
You touched on Aguero. I was going to come to Aguero a bit later on, but since we've kind of reached that point of the show now, let's be a bit fluid and go there now. Obviously, you mentioned his contract is up at the end of the season. He turns 33 in June. He's obviously had a torrid season with injuries and COVID. What's the latest fitness wise? Because he's been in squads and he's he's been on the bench, but it's almost been like he's in the squad in name only. What does Guardiola mean when he says things like he can't wait to put him back in the team? Because surely like if he's making the squad, surely he must be pretty close to the team.
Yeah, but so the thing is, I talked about this last week and said, look, maybe he's in the squad just because he's great to have around. Obviously, he's fit enough to be in the squad. But when you've got a bench of nine players and, you know, Guardiola, especially in a big game like yesterday, rarely makes too many changes anyway, if things are going to his liking, whether they're winning or not. So he doesn't make too many changes. It just makes sense to have Aguero there. If he can be there, if he can be part of the squad, it's good for him and it's good for the others. That's what I thought last week. That's still what I think now. But the only thing I could really say anything differently now is people are like, it's the same thing. People, if something doesn't quite make sense on the face of it, people look for reasoning. So the same thing with Arteta. Oh, City aren't playing well. Is it because Arteta's gone? Oh, they are playing well. Is it because of Juanma Leo? Or earlier in the season, it was, are they not playing well? Is it because of fatigue? When I thought, well, they weren't playing well last season either. So it's not just fatigue. There's something else going on. And obviously there was, and Guardiola changes it and it's fine. But I think there's the same thing now. People are like, oh, is there a problem with Aguero and Guardiola? Some people have been like, oh, Guardiola's handling of Aguero is disgraceful. Is he forcing him out? Guardiola said yesterday he'd been out for a year. Obviously, it's not been a year because he got injured in June, but he's barely played since then. He's had loads of different setbacks and he had COVID. And Aguero, when he was doing his Twitch stream a couple of weeks ago, before he'd even had the negative test, so when he still had it, he was saying how, one day he felt all right and then he was running between his kitchen and his living room. He said, faster than I do in a game. And he was knackered and he called the doctor and he was like, what's the matter? And the doctor was like, no, that's just a symptom. So he was struggling with that kind of fatigue element. And it's but the other thing is, if people were, this might be rich if you don't believe me on the Laporte stuff and Guardiola's comments, but if you were looking for trouble and you were thinking what's gone on between them, if you were to think, oh, well, Aguero hasn't warmed up before matches on the three times he's been on the bench. But if you were thinking, well, maybe he's refused to warm up, no way. If he refused to warm up and there was a problem, he wouldn't be in the squad again. If there was a problem between them and if he was refusing to warm up, but Guardiola was telling him not to warm up, which is ridiculous, you wouldn't put him in the squad. That doesn't add up.
Yeah.
So when Guardiola says, I'd love to put him back in the team, but he also said, I want him to be ready for him. I want to be sure for him. It's purely not rushing him back. And I mean, maybe there's an issue there over the condition of the knee. Maybe it's just the fact that Aguero always tended to need a few games back after injury. But if you think about his injuries over the years, generally he'd be out for 3 or 4 weeks. The classic Aguero injury would be 3 or 4 weeks in November, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And then it'd take a couple of weeks to get back and then he'd be fine. And that would be it. He's not had a serious injury like this. So if he did need that bit of extra time, then he's going through that. We talked about the meniscus problems and how that's difficult for all players to overcome. And then obviously he did overcome that, but he got a hamstring injury. So it's that thing of recovering from a knee injury, a very difficult one when it's a meniscus. Muscle injuries, which we've seen with the hamstring. COVID as well. Is that not just obvious? Is it obvious that he would just need time to come back? I agree it's a little strange for him to be in the squads but not warm up. But it's a strange situation to be in, all of those injury problems with COVID on top. Like I said, there's nine subs now. We might as well put him in the team. He's great to have around, but he's obviously not quite ready. And also,
I was going to say, not only that, you mentioned there's extra games been put into the schedule. The Champions League's on its way back soon. Yeah. There's plenty of time left this season.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, if we're looking at it with cold eyes, we'd probably say, look, we're getting into March now. He's not played. As far as I know, he was told last season, be fit by the end of the year. to have a good chance of getting a contract. So he wasn't fit by the end of the year. We've had 2 months of it. So it doesn't look good, but like I said, there's so many games. Absolutely loads. And he's so important. He's so good. And look, the Arsenal game, which we haven't really talked about, just... I know Sterling's getting the chances, and even if Aguero were playing, it would still be Sterling getting those chances. But my God, just somebody put the ball in the net. So if Aguero comes in and chips in with 5 goals, 8 goals between, you know, March and May, they could be really important. So, and then it's like, okay, yeah, we'll have a look and we'll see what the situation is, depending on, you know, Haaland and other circumstances.
Yeah.
I've mentioned the dreaded name there, but...
it'll get aggregated in a bit, so they will be all right. While we're on contract expiries as well, obviously Fernandinho's is up at the end of the season. He turns 36 in May, and yet the performance at Arsenal, you would not know it, would you?
No, he was really, really good. And it was like, even early on, just in that really obvious Fernandinho way of going around and making tackles. And honestly, I know people get touchy about the tactical fouls thing. It's not really a tactical foul thing. But the way he makes fouls is a work of art. Like, there was one time, again, it was Aubameyang over on the Arsenal left-hand side. It was in the second half. And I can't really describe this without it sounding like really dirty and dangerous. It wasn't dangerous, but it was like, I think he'd already beaten somebody, Aubameyang, and he was kind of heading towards the box. And Fernandinho kind of not jumped in, because that's a very loaded phrase in football, but he kind of made the contact with like both knees. And he kind of jumped in and placed himself in the way to be like, well, you ain't getting past. And he kind of... Aubameyang kind of stumbled through it, but I think I probably gave a foul or an advantage just afterwards. But just that way that Fernandinho is just like, well, you ain't getting past, so forget it. Like, it was great. The only reason I remember the one thing he did wrong, I think it was just one thing, because by the time it was with about 20 minutes to go or whatever, I was like, God, he's been so good. I don't think he's put a foot wrong. And as I was thinking that, he tied that ball out to the right-hand side over the top, and it just went out of play and there was no one there. And I was like, oh, okay, so he has done one thing wrong. But literally everything was just so good. And yeah, that obvious way he's got of just winning the ball back and being in the right place. And yeah, when you say, like, he's 35 years old and he's doing that, and also he's not played too much. No, he was injured as well. I thought he might have played against Everton if he was a bit fitter. I might have been wrong on that. But obviously, Everton was his first game after a couple on the sidelines with the famous Guardiola niggles. So, yeah, 35 years old, coming back from injury, playing like that in a tough game against Arsenal where, you know, it was all very tricky in midfield and man-to-man and not many people to pass to and blocking off lanes. You know, if he wasn't sharp at all, he would have dwelt on the ball a bit. And the reason I started talking about Arsenal and that shape they got into when we were talking about Stones at the start was, how many times did Stones and Diaz just end up dribbling until about 30 yards out from the Arsenal goal? Because Arsenal were just like, well, we're not going to pressure. We're just going to stay back here and not give you anyone to pass to. So it's so good that City centre-backs are so comfortable on the ball just to say, okay, well, we'll just bring it right up.
We'll just carry it then, yeah.
And it's just, I mean, it was so obvious as well in games like that when you've got the midfielders, obviously, but you've also got Bernardo playing, who wasn't strictly in midfield. Obviously you've got Edison, you've got Zinchenko, and you've got Cancelo, and the centre-backs, everyone on that pitch, obviously Sterling and Mahrez are good on the ball, but everyone else on that pitch is basically a midfielder in terms of the level of competency in possession. And it's games like yesterday when Arsenal just block you off and don't let you play through, which is like why they were like 4-0 up against Leeds like really easily, because Leeds are good, but like obvious to say they're not as good as City. But every one of those City players, just they basically had 8-9 midfielders on the pitch, and they're just so comfortable knocking it around, and just didn't flinch with Arsenal saying, "Well, you got no one to pass to," because they're like, "Well, we have. We're just going to find a way."
Just thinking of what you said there, because obviously they played without a striker, and then you look at the back four. Well, Cancelo has been playing like a midfielder anyway. Stones has played in midfield, and Zinchenko is a midfielder.
yeah, exactly. I mean, the Stones in midfield experiment wasn't great.
I take your point.
And the thing with Diaz is Stones is better on the ball than Diaz. I think Laporte is as well, but Diaz is definitely improving. And I think maybe the reason in the first goal, because my article, which we haven't talked about, but my article, without because it was kind of like, okay, it was 1-0. It wasn't like a huge win, so we could say, because I felt like doing a one-time hit for the next big City win. So if City win the next couple of games and then blitz United, and everyone's like, wow, I might do like a, why is City so good again? And just talk about the tactical changes and the kind of personnel things, just for like City fans to read, but also fans of other clubs who actually don't want to just say, oh, money or oil or whatever, and actually want to learn. I might do that. And I thought, if City win like 4-0 yesterday, then I was going to do that. But they didn't. And I thought, do we talk about the defence again? I was like, we're probably going to be talking about Stones and Diaz when they're in the team of the year in about 6 weeks. I was like, the forwards, I was like, I don't want to talk about a City win as, because I thought the most obvious thing for me was this shows up why they need a forward. But I just thought it's not quite the time and the place. And then, so my article was Mahrez's first touch.
Yeah.
Because I was like, we've mentioned, everyone mentioned, everyone knows it's there. And I just thought for a little game like that, when it played such a big part in City's goal, I thought it'd be worth talking about a bit and just eulogising a little bit. And easy article, hopefully brings a lot of entertainment and enjoyment to people, and we move on to something else. But so I was analysing that the move quite a lot, and it was like Arsenal. I don't know if it just happened just naturally, or the way Arsenal pressed. Maybe they just, you know, they dropped a level for a second, or they didn't do it right. But the way Arsenal pressed the whole game, they made it difficult for City to find options. But they seemed to be happy to let Diaz have the ball on his right foot. Aubameyang had cut off the ball to Stones, and Pepe was closing him down, so he couldn't come back towards Zinchenko. And maybe they were thinking, Diaz isn't that good with his expansive passing. Right, he's good. And in fact, one of the best passes he did was against Arsenal at the Etihad, for the build-up to the one goal there. But I wonder if they thought, let him play the long ball and we'll be fine, or it just didn't work, one of the two. But he played that long ball out to Mahrez, and it was perfect. And then obviously from there, it's just an absolute guarantee that Mahrez is going to bring that ball down. So I know, yeah, we're going back to Stones being really good on the ball, Diaz less so. But Diaz has improved a lot as the season's gone on. And if he gets he's pretty much there. He's not afraid to have the ball. He was carrying it into the opposition half, which you just wouldn't do if you were nervous. You know, you don't end up accidentally doing that. You just shuffle it to somebody else and don't take responsibility. So he takes that responsibility on the ball, off the ball, and he's getting there to kind of City centre-back levels in terms of competency and possession.
Yeah, you've played with me long enough to know that sometimes you do end up in positions you don't mean to be with.
Not on a professional level.
Yeah.
Not for City, I think, because they know where exactly they're supposed to be.
We actually started that with Fernandinho, and obviously a lot of the questions about his future and this to happen. There's options that fans put forward, and I don't know how realistic some of them are, because there's potential talk of a contract extension, because his performances show that he's clearly not past it. You also have the complication that Rodri has improved in the last few weeks and months, and kind of it feels like now is probably the right time to make more of that transition from Fernandinho to Rodri, especially with the number of games that Rodri plays instead, because he's one of Guardiola's favourite players in this current squad, isn't he? And then you also get the option of could Fernandinho take up a coaching role, and that's not necessarily like what if he doesn't want that sort of thing? I don't think you can just kind of suggest it. Oh well, that makes sense, because it's kind of what he wants as well.
Yeah. So the thing with Fernandinho is, I mean, and as well, Guardiola's comments yesterday, it really did sound like he was saying goodbye, and.
A friend of mine screenshotted it and put it in our WhatsApp group and just said, this sounds like Fernandinho has died.
Yeah. Was it a screenshot of Jack's tweet?
It might have been, yeah.
Yeah, but Jack's tweet was like, he was so good today, so good, I'll never forget him. But on top of that, it was more like, I'll never forget him, everything he's done. It really did, like, I did think, right, he's either leaving or he's died after the game. Like, it was like that. I mean, I've got to be honest, if I'm leaning into the journalism craft a bit, I'm working on an article about his dressing room presence, because, like, before Guardiola had talked about it, I'd heard from one of the players, I don't know, November, December, that Fernandinho's really stepped it up this season. And I was like, that's interesting. And I was annoyed, actually, because I'd written a paragraph about it in my article after the Manchester Derby, the Carabao Cup one. But I was like, it's a bit of a tangent, that. I'll cut it out. And then it was like the press conference after Guardiola had said, oh, Fernandinho has been great this season. I was like, oh, fuck's sake. but then Foden mentioned it on an interview on Soccer AM. I think Guardiola mentioned it again. And then he put in a very subtle little mention as well after a game recently. And I was like, so I'm kind of working on getting the examples I need for that article of why he's been so good and why he's been so helpful for the team. And I thought, if people start talking about Fernandinho leaving now, my article's not ready. So I was like, I'm not gonna ask if Fernandinho is leaving or not. Which, I mean, that might be a terrible thing to admit, but there'll be plenty of time for that. The talk of him getting a coaching role, I think, will be probably based on that, what I'm talking about in terms of his dressing room management.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm really, really hoping this week even would be able to do something on that. And there'll be a lot of examples of how he's done that over the years, but also this season. So that'll be a huge part of it, because he's kind of, you know, the manager in the dressing room. He just sorts things out. And then there's also the other element of, you know, he's very tactically astute, and he talked about Guardiola tactics. He's got a tactics board in his house. He talked about it with his son. So he's like, people always assume, well, rightly, but, you know, Xabi Alonso, players like this, and, you know, when City have needed under 23 managers in the past, even, you know, when Guardiola came or this summer, just gone, people were always hoping it would be one of Guardiola's former players. But I think Fernandinho is right in that mould. No, he's not quite the Xabi Alonso type of player. Obviously, he's really good on the ball, but he's a bit more combative, obviously. But he's definitely in that mould of a Guardiola player, perfect, and, you know, could go into coaching. So that offer of him doing that, it does make huge sense. But the other element of it is, I'm kind of speaking to his people a bit, just for help on this article, and obviously, you know, try and stand up the stuff independently as well. But also, they've been quite skittish in the past when I've tried to find that information.
Yeah.
And it's like, when they're being helpful in terms of, oh yeah, we'll be able to set you up with this, or you can speak to so-and-so, I don't want to then say, have you seen this about, and then, you know, then they go cold on me again. So again, a bit of a peek behind the curtain and playing the journalistic game sometimes. I need to get what I need out of this.
Yeah.
And then I'll chance my arm, because it's not like, if I thought they would answer me straight away, I'd do it. But yeah. I just feel like it's going to be it could cause problems. So
my only kind of concern about it all is that, you know, he is, like we said, he is turning 36 in May, but if he's playing to this level right now, then even if it's not at City, he might feel that he's got, you know, magic in the boots, so to speak, and he can still play somewhere else. And not only that, it's like you're asking someone, like, when you finished your career, do you want to stay in Manchester, sort of thing? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So when I said before that he was weighing up what to do, and you were like, does that mean there's been an offer? And I was like, yeah. That's how it was put to me. The confusion there was, which I cleared up the next day in a tweet, the confusion there was he was kind of deciding whether he wants to stay in Manchester or whether he wants to go back to Brazil. So it wasn't like, he's got this offer to stay in Manchester and he's got this offer to go to Brazil. It was just kind of, he's sorting out what he wants to do, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, I, you know, to me, without knowing fully the situation, I don't know. It seems like, I mean, I'm comparing it to other players, actually. You know, like when Bravo was leaving City, sorry to mention him, but like he was linked with going to like Boca Juniors, and he was just like, I don't want to go back to South America. And Zabaleta was like, well, don't want to go back to South America. You know, and they want to go and live somewhere else in Europe, in another city. Obviously, Zabaleta went to London in the end. And he's retired, I think. Did Zabaleta retire recently?
Yeah, we talked about it because he announced it, I think, at the end of last season, didn't he?
Yeah, but he always wanted to play in Italy. But because there's no fans in the stadium, he just said, well, what's the point? Which is really sad. I mean, maybe he wouldn't have got an offer anyway, or maybe he would, but he just thought, I'm not sure if that's what I want to do anymore, so he just called it a day. But in a lot of cases, South American players have certainly been at City, haven't wanted to go back. Maybe I'm just making that assumption with Fernandinho and Brazil, but it does seem like that's a good option for him. But yeah, like for various selfish reasons, I've not so much selfish, but playing the game a little. I don't know fully where he's at with that, but hopefully by having a bit of patience, I'll be able to put out a really good article on what he's like off the pitch. Hopefully an interview with him towards the end of the season about what he does on the pitch. And yeah, hopefully as well, we'll be able to find out where he's going or if he's going anywhere. But I know what you're saying about in terms of that transition. I just think it would make sense to have him around.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't even need to officially be a coach. I suppose if he did stay and didn't play anymore, he could be a coach. But it just feels like he could easily do another season of this. You know, with those dressing room responsibilities of managing the dressing room and playing a bit. But yeah, like you say, maybe you'll think he could play
more
30 and, games somewhere
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
But, yeah. We'll find out.
Yeah. Before we finish, Sam, we should mention we've got the quiz coming up soon, haven't we?
Yes. A week today as we record, which is Monday. So it's the 1st of March, 7:30 p.m. UK time. As I waffled on a bit last week, if you win the prize and you don't live in the UK, officially, we're not allowed to post it abroad. But if you've got relatives in the UK, we can post it to a UK address. So message me, and if you haven't got relatives in the UK, you can use my relatives, and I'll make sure that that gets to you. And also, I don't want to say it now because it's about 10:30 in the morning and I haven't confirmed with City what the prize is going to be. And I just want to double check with our special halftime of the quiz guest as well. But hopefully later on Monday, maybe Tuesday, I'll confirm the prize and the person checking in at halftime for a little bit of a Q&A. You could probably guess.
Yeah, do check Sam's Twitter because as soon as you know, you'll tweet it out, won't you? So
yeah, and it'll be good. It would have been I think people would enjoy a City quiz anyway. And if they listen to this, a good chance they would listen to a City quiz hosted by me and you. I don't know what's the matter with them, but there we go. But then if you add on the prize element and the special guest element, then it should be a really good night. I've no idea how many people have signed up so far, but again, I'll post a link on my Twitter if you wanna sign up. I think so. It's over Zoom. I think everybody's automatically muted. So yeah, if you're thinking you can just join up and, you know, abuse us, unlucky, you can't.
You'll have to try harder.
there's plenty of other ways to do that. And also, I suppose just a little point of how it actually works. I think what the best thing is, if you've got a laptop or a computer where you can have the Zoom on, you then it's best to do the quiz on your phone.
Yeah.
That's the best way of doing it. So you'll have the Zoom on the computer and the quiz on your phone. You have to go to a link, put your name in, and that's how you submit the answers. So that's basically how it'll work, but I don't want to waffle on about it too much. But
have you finished your questions yet?
I've got one to do, but I really need to send it over. I've got one to do, which is a shambles. Just so lazy. Not lazy at all.
I'm still waiting to answer your lot. So
I did give you some though, didn't I?
And I didn't do as well as you did on mine. So I'm worried mine are too easy. So
no, but I'm now worried because you said they were very hard. I'm worried that I've gone mad and done ridiculous ones. But yeah, that one I sent you is quite fiendish, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, Sam, I'm going to finish with this because you can't have not expected this. So I've written some questions for you for the ending of this show. Yeah. The good news is they're all true or false. So you've just got a 50-50 shot on each one. So there's five of them. Let's see how well you do out of them. All right. Okay. Cool. First one. Kevin Keegan was the first City manager to name a starting 11 with no English players in it. True or false?
False.
That's true. I'm surprised you didn't know that game off the top of your head because it was the 3-1 win over United in November 2002, the last derby at Main Road.
No English player. I mean, that's why I was deliberating. I was like, it seems like that kind of era. And then what swung it in the end, I was like, maybe it was just a Sven team.
Yeah.
There we go.
Question two. The first player to score at the Euros tournament while contracted to City was Julian Lescott.
No, false.
No, that's true as well. It was England's 1-1 draw with France at Euro 2012. Sami Nasri was the second player to score at Euros while contracted to City. He did it 9 minutes later. He scored the equaliser.
That's a good
okay, so none out of five so far. Third question. The last City manager to have played a game at Main Road was Roberto Mancini. True or false?
Who else would it have been? Yeah. I'm going to go with true because when he was at Leicester.
It is true, and it wasn't while he was at Leicester. He played for Italy's under-21s in a 3-1 loss to England in the 1984 under-21 Euro Championships.
1984, Jesus.
Yeah. So one out of three so far. Question four, the first ever goal scored by a goalkeeper was scored by a City player.
Whatever.
Ever.
Partly because they've all been true so far, and I think that's the kind of thing you'll do. And also partly because City's have got a really good history with really good and interesting and quirky history with goalkeepers. I'm going to go with true.
It is true. Charlie Williams in April 1900. City were only six years old as a club. He scored at Roker Park since he lost 3-1.
They were minus 108 years old, if you believe the internet.
Can you make it? My maths isn't good enough to corroborate that, but you'll have to get a calculator out a bit later on. And finally, question five: the last player to win the match of the day, goal of the month competition while not playing in the Premier League was Georgie Kinklansy for City.
Well, I'm second guessing you now. Are you going to do four true and then the last one false? Why would they have? I suppose it was about 25 years ago. Why would they do my goal of the month that's not in the Premier League unless it was that good? The goal I'm thinking of was in the Premier League, wasn't it? I'm going to go with true just because all the rest are.
It is true because they are all true. He won it for the FA Cup goal against West Ham in 1998 because back in the 90s they used to include the FA Cup games that the BBC had.
I was obviously thinking, that was stupid. Anyway, I got it right, but for the wrong reasons. Sometimes happens. Got my tactics wrong, but we won anyway from a screamer. So
yeah, 3-0.
Manager's a genius.
3-2. I think you got three out of my five. So
yeah. Once I realised that they were all going to be true, that was after the third one. I was like, yeah, they're all true then.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Yeah, there's. I can promise you, there's better questions in this quiz on Monday night,
and you'll get a chance to answer. And also, like I said, it's kind of fastest finger first. That there's very unlikely to be a tie because you can get 150 points per question or something, and it ticks down. So if it takes you 10 seconds to get it, you'll have about 50 points left. If you get it straight away, you'll have got the full lot. So
yeah.
And very interesting little format.
And let me tell you, I did not answer any of Sam's questions particularly quickly. So there we go.
Oh, yeah. Well, there we go. It's going to be good.
Yeah. So go and sign up for that. That's it for this week's Why Always Us. I'm David Mooney. Thanks as ever to Sam Lee.
Yeah, cheers, guys.
You can sign up to The Athletic right now for less than £1 a week. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.